In the West, we inherit the idea of law from those ancient conceptions of God, and it is even passed down into science, where we discuss laws of nature. But one recognizes more and more in the sciences that what we call laws of nature are simply observed regularities in the way things behave. And you, in order to observe regularities, you must look at things through something regular. That is to say, you must lay a ruler alongside them, or compare their behavior with the regular behavior of a clock. But clocks and rulers are human inventions. They are regular measures which we use for comparing the rates of change. Say, a clock is a measure of a rate of change. It's quite arbitrary. But we very easily compare our regulation measuring devices with what makes things happen, as if the sun rises because it's 6 in the morning. Now that's being completely backwards in one's thinking. And we get into the same confusion when we imagine, for example, that money is wealth. Here we have fantastic wealth, you know, and we have the technological possibility of making everybody on earth the enjoyer of an independent income. We can't do it, because people say, where's the money going to come from? Because they think money makes prosperity. It's the other way around. It's physical prosperity, which has money as a way of measuring it. But people think money has to come from somewhere, like hydroelectric power or lumber or iron, and it doesn't. Money is something we invent, like inches. So you remember the Great Depression? When there was a slump. And what did we have a slump of? Money. There was no less wealth, no less energy, no less raw materials than there were before, but it's like you came to work on building a house one day, and they said, sorry, you can't build this house today, no inches. What do you mean, no inches? No, just inches. We don't mean we got inches of lumber, yes, we've got inches of metal, we've even got tape measures. But there's a slump in inches as such, you see? And people are that crazy. They can have a depression because they've got no inches to go around, or no dollars. That's all a lot of nonsense. But you see, because we get thinking backwards, making the metaphysical tail wag the dog, making the law rule things, whereas it doesn't. It's merely a way of measuring what happens. And so, you see, when you get into Buddhistic thought, you don't get that confusion. You're the other way around. So you're looking at a system where, to go back to the Buddha's words, this arises, that becomes, which is a way of saying, you can't have this without that. You can't have here without there. You wouldn't know where here was unless you knew where there was. And they come into being together. You don't get first here and then there, or first there and then here. These arise interdependently. That's the meaning of interdependent origination. And to grasp the idea of interdependent origination is as important as the idea about seeing how things are related by space and intervals. And seeing, therefore, that you tend to look at life from a myopic point of view, and see details, see the trees and not the forest, see yourself as something loosely related to everything else that's going on, and not integral to it. You see the figure, but ignore the background. But the figure and the background arise mutually. They are to each other as this is to that. And so, we really have to rid our brains of the notion of causality. The notion of causality being that present sets of circumstances are the result of past sets of circumstances. And that therefore certain events which are called causes are responsible for following events called effects. And all this is an enormous piece of mumbo jumbo. Because what is not seen and what is not clear in thinking that way is that in physical nature, there are no separate events. This is startling to people. But it's really quite easy to see that there are no events in nature. Because you can ask very simply, let's take something called an event. How do we demark it from other events? At what point, shall we say, were you born? Were you born at parturition? Or when the doctor slapped you on the bottom? Or cut the umbilical cord? Or when you were conceived? Or when your father and mother were first attracted to each other? When was it? When did you begin? There's no way of deciding except arbitrarily. And for legal purposes, we say you were born at parturition. And that's when the astrologer casts your horoscope, except that other astrologers disagree and want the conception time. And say, that's the real beginning. There isn't a real beginning. It goes back and back and back in an inseparable continuity. When are you dead? That's another big argument. And you can get all kinds of ideas about that. So at once you see that an event is a term in an intellectual calculus. Calculus being the way of measuring, say, curved formations by reducing them to point instants and counting it, you see. But actually, the point instants are imaginary. The curve wiggles along and it doesn't stutter from point to point. But in calculus, you make it do that. So just as there are no point instants in the curve, so there are no events in nature. Nature is a constantly fluctuating pattern. You can only designate particular wiggles in a pattern arbitrarily. You can count a convex formation as one wiggle, or a concave formation as one wiggle. Then you decide if you call it one way, well, if you give the convex properties the title of wiggle, you have to deny it to the concave properties. And vice versa. So when you see that what we call separate events don't exist, it becomes nonsense to speak of one event causing another. What you really mean is that the two events which you speak of as being causally related are simply two parts of the same event. They go with each other in the same way as this with that. The relationship is not causal. It is mutual. And it works two ways in time, because future, so-called future events, are not merely passive to past events. But you could easily see when, for example, any biological process goes on, you can reason just as well from the future to the past as from the past to the future. Why do two mammals have sexual intercourse? Well, it isn't just that they enjoy it. It's also that they're a very complex system which does this because it makes babies. And the prospect of baby works in reverse and creates desire. You can reason that way. Or it's silly. Because the whole process is one. And when we speak humanly and purposively, I am going downtown to buy groceries, then a future event could be said to be the cause of why you're now starting out to get into the car, buying groceries. And the difficulty we have in seeing this to be so is that we think in an either-or way, which is what is called dualism in Hindu Buddhist thought, and that liberation is being free from dualism. So when you think in an either-or way, you see the figures in the background as moving and therefore being responsible for their action. But if somebody argues the other way round, say the figures are just following lines of force in a field, gravitational principles say, we're all human beings, you see, we're all concentrated on our fact that we're individually rushing around and doing this and that. But we don't see that we're equally sucked and that we move around in response to all sorts of stimuli. But neither position is adequate. You have to see that our being sucked by all sorts of stimuli is exactly the same thing as our apparently voluntary and deliberate action. Because what we're looking at is not this Newtonian game of billiards where balls roll because they are hit by cues. What we're involved in is a dance where, for example, watch a snake. When a snake swims, there's nothing more beautiful than watching a snake swim in water. Lovely motion. But you see, it wiggles along, and its wiggle is conceivable, you see, as convex, or was it concave, this way, and that way, and this way, and that way. Now, which side of the snake moves first when it wiggles? See, it's very easy to see there. Now, when we interact with the world, what moves first? Who starts it? The objective world or the subjective world? But they are related as this to that. You can't have an object without a subject or a subject without an object. You can't have something known without the knower. And that gives the show away. There isn't any real distinction between the knower and the known. There's two ways of looking at something, yes. Two poles of a single process. But the knower and the known are subsumed as the knowing. And all life is knowing. Being, becoming. And it isn't something, in other words, that works by the idea of all this happens because someone shoves it. Now you see, the idea all this happens because someone shoves it is basic to Western thinking. There is the Lord God who's the boss. And he sloshes this universe into being and shoves it and sets it going. And you better obey that shove, because he's introduced into it some recalcitrance by giving to human beings what the Hebrews call the Yetzer Hara, the wayward spirit, so that they shall be able to play certain games on their own. Because nothing very interesting would happen if everybody obeyed God. The whole world would be like a lifeless thing, you see? So they had to reason that into it in order to save face for God, practically. Because otherwise he could be blamed for all the catastrophes that happened. Instead of our being able to say to each other, well, it's our fault.